Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno and Janine Gagliardi.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
We're all on Zoom.
The first time Janine and I have ever met.
Ever. This is actually the first time we've Zoomed, I think.
Well,
should we do it early in quarantine?
Early in the pandemic more.
Okay. Yeah. Instead, we've just been meeting in secret and kissing.
Yeah. That is not safe for the pandemic.
So, Mike, you signed on to his Switch.
Oh, Bill would like you to know, Mike, that you're signed on to your Switch.
Yeah, I was playing Bowser's Fury through that whole up until just a second ago.
He said he was playing Bowser's Fury.
So, no, what's sad is this actually feels like work now, because this is what work looks like.
Horrible.
Today's topic, oh boy, this has been brewing. This has been brewing.
It has been.
Today's topic is Harriet the Spy, both the motion picture from 1996 and the novel from 1964. Much older than I thought it was.
Yeah.
So I am kind of a little bit of an outsider because I read the novel, watched the film in this last week. And then I read about 70%, 65-70% of a biography of Louise Fitzhugh, the author of Harriet the Spy. So I've got all this fresh information in my head, but I'm coming to it as an adult.
You have done a lot more research than we have.
I've never read the book.
Or seen the film.
I'm just here to hang out.
Would be.
So I needed to get abreast of things because I know, here's the thing. I got this idea because I've heard multiple adult intellectuals that I know, especially adult writers, who say Harriet the Spy was a huge influence on them. And I'm fascinated by this. So I guess I want to start by, I want to know what your guys's like experience of Harriet the Spy is.
So I only became aware of it when the movie came out, which, what were you saying, is 97?
96.
96.
So how old were you, like a kid?
96, I was 9 years old.
Younger than the character.
How old is she? 11?
11, yeah.
She's 11. Yeah, so I was nine. It was the first Nickelodeon movie, I think, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that was a huge part of its marketing.
Mm-hmm. So that was like a big thing. And I feel like Nickelodeon was what Disney children graduated to. Like you become Nickelodeon, like tweens and like older kids. So that we're very, very much of the like all that and Rugrats and all the Nicktoons generation. So like Nickelodeon as a brand is huge. And so I remember just being really, really excited and not knowing what it was. And it looked kind of retro, which I didn't really understand at the time. Like I wasn't sure what time period it was supposed to be. And I just remember it was like all of my friends, like all my female friends got really swept up in it. Like everybody had notebooks that had Private across the cover in my school and in my neighborhood. And I don't know if you want to get into that a little bit more later, but I actually just saw Nancy today and she was saying like, oh, are you recording about Harriet the Spy? You have to talk about how we all had notebooks and we would like spy on the neighborhood. I had like two different notebooks going, like one for school and one for like home.
Wow.
Did anyone read?
No, I really wanted them to, but honestly, no one cared.
I won't get into my story, but mine was read and it was humiliating.
Did you have a Harriet the Spy type experience?
I did not. It was by my mother.
Wow.
Private on the cover. So naturally, my mom read it by my back. And then I was like, it's been compromised, and I destroyed it.
Oh, well, that's a good spy.
Yeah.
But I had like binoculars and I had like a flashlight. I feel like for people in our age group who are like creatives or like writerly types, Harriet the Spy was just absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
why? I want to know why.
I guess she makes the aspirational look doable. Like she, like, I think if you're like a reader, like a big reader, like you read about all these, you know, fantasies or spy novels or whatever it is, like Boxcar Kids or things, That seems so out of reach. And then, well, especially for the movie, you just see like she comes home from school, she throws on her stuff, and then she just goes out and she just investigates and she just walks around and looks at the world. And you, and it's just very tangible. It's very doable for a kid. Right. Like
there's no mystery. It's not like mm-hmm. Nancy Drew. Mm-hmm. There isn't a mystery, at least not in the first book. I haven't read the second two books.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. It's in so many other books, something has to happen. Like some right. event has to happen. And then the characters are usually responding to it. She goes out and she like makes her own trouble, right? Like she finds things to observe. She creates mysteries herself.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that like the thing that stuck with me as a kid was, I think you put it really well when you said like it made the aspirational scene doable. Because I remember thinking about how she said, oh, I just have to write down everything I see and then I'll be a good writer when I grow up. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me. And I was like, oh, so then I just have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird the way that like being a writer got in the book and the movie gets linked to being a spy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very interesting because neither the movie or the book makes that connection clear, yet you immediately get what it means.
Well, I think it's just by, and I think especially in the movie, which I think has more of a heart than the book, I would argue, by the end, she comes to the realization, and I think the major lesson is that it's not about being a spy, it's about just being an observer, like mm-hmm. a observer of people.
Well, I think she really wants to understand people, and I think she learns simply empathy. She, you know, in the end, she talks about, you know, what it would be like to walk in sports shoes. I think she was an observer, and I think she evolves into realizing, like, it has to be more than just observation. I have to actually, like, think about other people's feelings.
Right. Well, like, I just watched the movie today, and it's so funny. It's the first time I've watched it in probably 20 years, but I had watched it so many times that, like, beat for beat, everything was coming back to me. Mm-hmm. Like I almost like I had it memorized. And there's that part, I don't know if it's in the book because I haven't read the book. I just started reading it for the podcast, but I didn't get to finish it for today.
Did you read it when you were younger?
Yeah, I read it when I was younger too, but I saw the movie first. When I was watching it today, what struck me is that part at the end where Gully, Rosie O'Donnell's character, says, you know, writing isn't just about writing things down. It's, you got to do something with it.
Mm-hmm. And she says something about like, it's about putting joy into the world.
Yeah. Beauty into the world. Yeah.
But then she also says, and I find this very subversive, and I find the book very subversive.
You have to lie.
You have to lie.
Mm. Yeah.
The lesson is lying is good.
I found that to be, sort of groundbreaking for a children's movie because they kept it in.
Yeah.
And you know, children's movies, I guess they didn't always used to be like this, but they're very moralizing, I find. And so like yeah. the idea of nuance is explored in this movie, which, and I guess the book as well, which is interesting. But going back to the truth and the lie, she quotes Keats.
Yeah.
Beauty is truth, truth, beauty. But I mean, this is all within the context of her trying to become this class, like newsletter writer. So she's trying her hand at journalism and like objective reporting and also learning that lying is okay sometimes. So it's sort of like this weird mixed message.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like about being an objective reporter, but also learning social graces and and maybe not so much lying, but like lying by omission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you don't have to be a gossipy little, you know, whatever. when you're right, and then there's that nice moment at the end where she says, you know, like, I hurt some people's feelings, and just because someone's dad lives far away doesn't mean he doesn't love them.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of like, without naming Marion Cawthorn, like apologizes to Marion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest movie villain of all time.
Oh my god, when she's like, go over there until we figure out what to do with you.
I love that.
I texted Janine today that monologue from the bathroom where she's
oh
like,
"Oh my god,
like, you made up all those stories. Your dad doesn't love you." Takedown in film history.
I have to say, she's just as savage and more savage in the book. The movie makes Harriet sweeter,
mm.
where in the book Harriet is very sarcastic, and she, you know, her observations. One of the problems I have with the movie, I'll be honest, I really love the book. I didn't like the movie, but I'm watching it now as an adult. In the movie, she's like a spy, but then out of nowhere, they steal her notebook and then they start reading bad shit about it. And really, that doesn't track. Like, that's not set up at all. In the book, you see that she's constantly making observations. It's more than just spying. When she has a thought, she writes it down. And you see in the book her, what she's writing about different people. And it's all true shit. It's just harsh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I say that I think that the movie has more heart. I remember when I was a kid and I watched the movie first and then I read the book. I remember feeling by the end of the book that I felt like Harriet doesn't redeem herself in the book the way she does in the movie. And that bothered me even then. What's funny is I think of it as like a classic, but like I just was reading up on it for today and like it was not well reviewed, that movie, when it came out.
No, no. I watched Siskel and Ebert give it 2 thumbs down.
Which is shocking, because to me, it's just like such a huge part of my childhood.
Mm-hmm. When so the book is written by Louise Fitzhugh, who was she had a childhood a lot like Harriet's. Her father was very, very rich. Her father was a lawyer, but instead of living in New York and being part of the New York social scene, she lived in Memphis, Tennessee, in the height of segregation. And, you know, when I read the book, I thought Gully was African-American. I read the illustration as white. In the biography, they say that she specifically made it non-racial. Mm. But Gully is based on the nurses and the nannies that she had, which were all African-American.
That makes it so much more like To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's so much like, I kept thinking of Calpurnia so much. See, that's another big difference from the book to the movie, where I prefer the book. In the movie, Rosie O'Donnell is sort of a free spirit, you know, whereas in the book, she's much more stern and actually gives structure that Harriet needs. And she's much more of, you know, tough love kind of a person.
Yeah, Golly's definitely different in the movie. She is, in the book, she's much more stern. And even in the beginning, like rather than going to that fun garden, they go to like visit her mentally impaired mother, I think.
Yeah, who's very impoverished too. There's a lot of class in both the movie and the book. There's a lot of class.
The book is very New York-y. You could tell that the movie was filmed in Canada.
Yeah. When the book came out, it had mostly really great reviews. Which took her by surprise, because she had been an artist. She was a painter. And then just kind of like as a lark, her and a friend wrote a book called Suzuki Bean, which was a parody of Eloise in the Plaza. And then they got their foot in the door of publishing. So they're like, she just wrote another kid's book. And then it became a big hit. And she all of a sudden was a children's author from being like a painter and a sculptor. A lot of the reviews were really good, yet the negative reviews were all like, Harriet is nasty. This is a nasty child. Don't let your kid read this book because this character, this little girl, is irredeemable and bad. She's a nasty woman. In the book, there's a couple of times where I was like, wow, this is radical. Like, there's a couple of times where her parents are like, you're going to do this. And she's like, no. She just says no. And it's like, whoa.
Do they send her to therapy in the book?
Yes.
Which at the time, I feel like early 60s analysis, right, as radical, they would call it, was sort of a kind of newish idea of it being mainstream.
Yeah, the publisher was a little bit worried about that.
I remember not understanding really like why she was going. I knew it was like a therapist, but I was like, why are they sending her there? Like not understanding that it's actually like a pretty responsible move on her parents' part, because she seems to be having like severe social issues at school. But
right. Well, she's like, being severely bullied.
Mm-hmm. It is the portrait of a girl unraveling. And I feel like it was also like my first exposure to like depression.
Yeah, big time.
I remember the first time I saw it being like, wow, I wasn't expecting this movie to be so sad for so long in the middle.
Half the book is that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a long time.
Yeah.
And I was triggered. So triggered. Harriet, I'm going to say it right now. She did nothing wrong. She did nothing wrong. The book, it was not a burn book like in Mean Girls. It was not for public consumption. It was private thoughts. And then she gets mercilessly bullied for it. Harriet did nothing wrong.
I don't know.
Why is that bad? Why is it bad?
You know, I think it comes back to the empathy thing that we were talking about. Like, in the beginning, well, I can only speak for the film, but in the beginning of the movie, we watch her watching Sport have this interaction at the store. And then she intervenes, like, you know, any good documentarian is not supposed to intervene, but she does, you know, she intervenes and she gives him some money and she writes it all down. And, you know, at the time, I guess I felt bad for Sport, but it didn't necessarily click that what she was writing about the incident could be perceived as hurtful because it was true. It's what happened. And I think in being exposed in this way, she learns that these things can be really painful for other people.
Right. She definitely learns a lesson, but I don't think that she was wrong. I mean, think if you wrote something negative about someone in your journal, and then they broke your privacy to read it, would they have the right to be mad at you just because you thought something negative about them?
I don't know. I'm working this out. Like, I guess it depends on how bad it is.
It's also different in the movie and book. In the movie, it's more just nasty shit, which to me, I feel like isn't in the character of the girl we know so far. But in the book, it's all like pretty funny shit. It's like little Fran Lebowitz.
I don't know. I feel like in the movie, it's observational too. Like even like the way that like tone is a big part of it. Like when Marion reads the part about Sport, she's like, he's so poor. I had to give him $1 just to buy bread. Like Harriet probably didn't write it like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was just read that way.
But the stuff about Janie, like she reads it in her voice.
Right.
When she's in the beginning making the observation, like she's going to be a Nobel Prize winner or a mad scientist. And it's like, no problem. You know, it's really lighthearted. And then Janie takes it. I mean, I feel like Janie kind of took it off the wall there because it really wasn't that bad of an observation.
It's like a total nutcase.
Yeah.
That's it. Total nutcase. She has spores growing in her room. Clean your room. Disgusting.
Through 2021 eyes in the movie, Harriet drops the arsler.
She does.
She does. That's right. Oh my God.
When they're figuring out what game to play.
She's like, that's.
And then it's a hard R.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard R. I have to say, the thing that works best in the movie, just watching it as a grown up, is Michelle Trachtenberg. She's adorable.
She's excellent.
She's so good in it.
Mm-hmm.
They found the right kid. That's the best. That's the thing that works the most. Rosie O'Donnell cannot act. She cannot act at all.
I always feel like she's miscast in every role. And I don't know what a role for her would be. I mean, even...
She's miscast.
Maybe a League of Their Own. She's
great in a League of Their Own.
That's a good one. But like, golly... Betty Rubble, like what are people thinking?
She does the Betty voice really well.
Betty
she
Rubble
in this movie though.
yeah. Golly, well, Anthony and I have had this discussion. Golly deserved to be fired. I will say that. The movie version, I don't know, I can't speak for the book, but she absolutely deserved to be fired.
Why?
I've been a nanny. You're a nanny. You are in charge of the child. You have no permission from the parents to take the child out of the home. You certainly do not have any permission to bring strange adult men around the house that you have just started dating. You know, this is not her husband. You know, this is not someone she's been with for a while. This is someone she's on a date with. And she invited him into their house. Obviously, she did not get permission because the parents fired her over it, and they should have. And she removed the kid from the home, then came home late. So they came home and their child wasn't there. That's horrifying.
Defenses, we had no idea you'd be home so early.
Yeah, like we do this all the time, P.S.
You know what I picked up as an adult that I didn't as a child? The subtle jealousy that the mother shows toward Golly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely went way over my head as a kid. But when I watched it this time around, I was like, oh, part of the reason why she fires her is because she's jealous that Harriet is closer with her. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's that part where she says, do you want me to tuck you in? And she's like, no, Golly can do it.
Yeah.
Walk away together. But then she doesn't end up firing her anyway, because then they beg her to stay after.
Right. There's something interesting that happens in the book that doesn't happen in the movie, that it doesn't excuse Golly's actions, but it makes it a little bit more understandable, which is they have been dating and he asked her to marry him that night. So she's like, this man is going to be my husband. He just proposed to me this evening and we were kind of celebrating. And I'm leaving and moving with him to another state. That, I think, the celebration of the change in her life, I think, is a little bit different.
Mm.
Let's talk about the class thing, because that character is interesting in that he was rich.
Mm-hmm.
He said he didn't want to be rich anymore. His wife left him, and now he's happy being poor.
Yeah.
And that's pretty radical, too. I mean, these are the things that hold the book together that are not as prevalent in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I never, I didn't think deeply on that one. But yeah, class is definitely there. Cause like sport and his dad are, struggle, and Harriet's rich. And I guess that's something that I didn't really think about as much when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But she's sort of privileged. She's very privileged, actually. And then I guess there's even a class thing with Golly, right? Cause Golly is like, she works for the family.
Right. Which is why her being a little bit more stern, especially in the book, the way that she leaves is more like, all right, I love you, but no crying because life goes on. Like it's not as heart, it's heart wrenching, but it's not as like, the goodbye is not as sweet as it is in the movie.
You didn't like that in the movie?
No, I did. My main problem with the movie is its style, the cinematography, the costuming, it all is, falls into that 90s Nickelodeon aesthetic of surreal and over the top stylized. And
I read that they said that they didn't want to tie it to any specific time period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, too bad, because it's so fucking 90s.
No, but it doesn't feel like the 90s. No, like, it doesn't feel like they live in the 90s.
Yeah, a lot of what they wear is 60s-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but to me, the camera movements, the all of that feels like a 90s thing.
Well, the part where Janie's like experiment explodes all over the mother is just like classic Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm. There's so many Dutch angles, and it's just filmed in a style that's very, very unnatural, where the book has a much more subtle sort of naturalism to it. The book is more quiet. The movie is, I don't know the last time you saw it, Janine, but you might be surprised to find out that it's really just montage after montage after montage with like shitty background music. Like it just kind of looks like a bunch of music videos tied together.
I could see that. I mean, in terms of story, and I don't know if there's a lot more in the book, but there's not a ton of story there. It's like she walks around, she observes people, she's, outed by her schoolmates, and then she goes through this like emotional growth period. Where she loses her nanny, she loses her friends, and it's, this coming of age story where she comes out the other end a little worse for wear, but she's learned something. And I feel like if anything, then the over the top camera angles and like making it look larger than life and sort of surreal maybe speaks to how Harriet sees the world and, her position in it and how to her the world is fascinating, even though it's ordinary.
Uh-huh. Okay. This is just a side note, side question. Is it Golly or Golly?
I think it's Golly, right?
Because Michelle Trachtenberger can't say that.
She says Golly.
Yeah, she says Golly or Trachtenberg, not Trachtenberger.
And is it old Golly or just Golly?
In the movie, it's just Golly.
She says at one point, though, and when I was a kid, I thought she was saying because I didn't know she says "ol" in the book, but she's like hugging her pillow or something, going like "ol golly, ol golly, ol golly," like over and over again.
Golly's a lot older in the book.
How old do we think she's supposed to be in the movie?
I think she's supposed to be like 36.
That's so upsetting.
It was the 90s, so she's probably like 23.
Oh God.
It's like she's the oldest woman alive.
Well, just everybody looked older, I feel like, with that styling.
Yes, absolutely. I look at parents in movies now and I'm like, I'm the same age as them. Why do they look 100?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, Mike, you're really maligning this movie and it's hurting my feelings.
I'm sorry.
I don't think you understand how much this meant to me.
First of all, let me thank you for your candor and your vulnerability.
Janine, you have a Harry the Spy tattoo.
I do.
What? How have we gone this far into the podcast without you mentioning it?
So I don't even know if this is in the book, but... Wait,
when did you get this?
I was 20, 19, something like that. It's on my foot. It's on like the heel of my foot.
What is it?
It's the tattoo they give each other, the little friendship tattoo. I think she calls it like an animiki in the movie.
Yeah.
And she draws it on their feet and like they push feet together.
There's a lot of disgusting feet work in the movie.
It makes me wonder if Dan Schneider was involved in it.
Oh, God.
Because there's also that part where she like smells and washes her disgusting feet.
Oh my God, yeah, in the bathroom. And I'm sort of like at school. I'm like, do they not have teachers? Like, are they not wondering where this kid is, just like washing herself in the bathroom? Also, what was with that paper towel roll that was just like really long and everybody wiped their hands on it?
That was like the 50s style. It's like a real, like, I don't think it's paper.
Oh, it's sanitary.
It really is. But the sink was so cool.
I forgot. I kept
waiting for Moaning Myrtle to come out.
Yeah. But you step on the sink.
I forgot how satisfying that slap is.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, it's a closed fist punch. Wow. Harriet punches that bitch.
It's so funny. Like, there are so many things that stick out in my head that like friends and I have talked about over the years. And I remember, like, it's just such a thing to say, like, the only thing worse than being Marion Hawthorne is wanting.
Wanting.
What's really hard about that is they all look at the girl who obviously wants to be her.
Oh, Rachel.
Like, everyone knows it's Rachel. I got to give credit to the 90s. They made Rachel of Asian descent. They made Janie African-American.
Oh, I was going to ask you that, if she's African-American in the book.
It's illustration. She's white. I think they're all white.
Oh, yeah, right. It is illustrated. Yeah. But Janie's more of an anarchist in the book. She wants to blow up the world. She says that more than once.
Well, she talks about Oppenheimer, right?
Yeah.
And the Manhattan Project.
That ending where they're all dancing.
I love that.
Yeah.
James Brown.
Yeah, I like the use soundtrack in it.
Yeah, I also felt like the music contributed to the like displacement in time. Like, you don't know what era it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I feel like it also like brought in a lot of trends for like kids our age. Like hoodies, like I remember she was wearing a hoodie and like nobody had hoodies at the time. Like hoodies are not as ubiquitous as they are now. And I remember being like, I want the sweatshirt, like the kind of sweatshirt that she has. And then, you know, like within the next years, like everybody had zip up hoodies. She was wearing Converse. You know, she had like wide leg jeans. You know, it was a whole look.
Well, Louise Fitzhugh, she got to a point in her teenage years where she only wore male clothing. And Harriet dresses the same way in the book. And another criticism when the book came out was that Harriet dresses in an androgynous way, which is also why a lot of young queer readers loved it. Let's bring in some of that, the sort of queer reading of it, because Louise Fitzhugh was an openly bisexual person. The fact that she was so wealthy and didn't need to work allowed her to be open, even in the 50s. She wore only male clothing, had very short hair. She loved men, loved women. And there's no one explicitly gay or bi in the book, yet there's a queerness to it that I think people read in both the movie and the book.
I feel like Janie, Sport, and Harriet are all sort of like outsiders, you know, and they like create their little like friend, group because they all identify as outsiders. And really, I mean, at least in the movie, they don't really have a ton in common, except that, you know, that they all kind of exist outside of the social norms. I mean, they sort of dress Janie in a masculine way as well. I feel like her clothes are cooler, like her clothes are better, but she's got combat boots on.
Well, one of my problems is in that Nickelodeon style, a lot of the times their clothing matches. The three of them are matching each other in a very all that kind of way.
It's definitely got the Nickelodeon aesthetic. It was the first Nickelodeon movie.
Mm-hmm.
A great choice for the first Nickelodeon movie.
Yeah, it was a good choice. And The director was a woman, which kudos to you, Nickelodeon. And she's gone on to direct mostly TV, some episodes of Breaking Bad, things like that.
Really? Interesting.
Did she do music videos before?
That I'm not sure of. The director's name is Broen Hugh. Oh, Broen Hughes. Something in the book that I really liked that's not in the film is when her parents take away her notebook, she talks about how she feels like she can't even think. She's like, how can I need to put my thoughts down on paper for them to flow. It's like her thoughts she's such a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I think there's something inspirational about a child who thinks she has a job.
Capitalism.
But no, I mean, it's not, because she doesn't, she's an artisan. She's a craftsperson.
It's her calling.
Right. Right. She says, you know, when they say you can't play with your notebook, she's like, it's not play. It is work.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on to found TMZ.
Yes.
That's what happens. She essentially runs a gossip column.
Just for herself, though. Which is great.
At the end, it's sort of like that too, right?
Yeah. She couldn't help but wonder.
In the movie, she immediately apologizes to everybody. But in the book, it goes on longer. And like for the first couple of weeks that she's editing the paper, it's just all gossip shit. She's like keeps going with her nonsense. It's great.
Well, I mean, when she types the newsletter, it's all about them, like not about what they've done in class or the accomplishments at the school or anything school related. It's just about like their personal lives.
Yeah.
And it's like a mea culpa that she writes for the first issue. Oh, we didn't talk. Well, you wanted to talk about the notebook, but did you want to talk about how this is like the major first instance of cancel culture?
Harriet Gets Canceled.
Harriet Gets Canceled. If it was remade today, it would be called Harriet Gets Canceled.
It would be hashtag Harriet is over party.
That's right. Oh my God, Anthony, let's write it.
Yes.
Well, we didn't bring this up. So there was blog wars, right? Harriet the Spy blog wars.
What the fuck is that?
It's God, I don't know where it is available. It was Disney?
Disney made for TV movie.
Called Harriet the Spy Blog Wars.
Kind of like a remake / sequel.
Right. Okay. Harriet the Spy Blog Wars, 2010.
That is
up. They're in high school. It's kind of like Harriet the Spy meets Mean Girls.
Yeah, very much so. It seems like it was supposed to be. And they're running a blog, or they're like vying for who's going to run the school blog. She's a teenager. She's 16 in it. And let's see, she's still in a rivalry with Marion, and they're looking to become the official blogger of the high school class. So Golly suggests she write something that would be of interest to her class. And so then the rest of the movie, it seems, is about her stalking this movie star who's in town filming a spy movie. And then there is some like TMZ stuff that apparently goes down. She gets in trouble for stalking. So sure. Yeah, and then she has to apologize to the movie star, not her class. Yeah, but she gets the blog. I feel like she should go to jail, but she gets the blog.
So have you seen this?
I have not seen it. However, I know the writer of the movie.
Who is it?
Our friend Christina's friend Alex wrote the movie with her mother. And her mother is a Canadian filmmaker. And I got to know Alex through Christina's wedding. We were both bridesmaids. Really nice girl. She's a writer by trade. And she wrote the movie with her mom. And she was like, oh, I'm adapting Harriet the Spy, because we were talking about, you know, tattoos and stuff. I was like, are you kidding me? And not thinking like it was actually going to be anything. And she's, yes, it's a movie. She's the writer. She's,
you thought it was fanfic?
I don't know. When people tell me they're writing things or developing things, I'm like, that's great. That's awesome. I'd love to read it one day. Not thinking it's going to be on Disney Channel.
Everybody's always working on something.
Yeah, we got irons in the fire.
I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, but you remember we went and we met up with somebody from college who was
this,
like,
is exactly what I was thinking, Anthony.
She was like working on a novel, and we were like, cool, what's it about? And she hadn't thought past that.
She was like, you know, I don't know. I was like, plot is always rough for me. And she's like, me too. I was like, so about that novel.
She's like, words are tough.
You know, I don't know. Sometimes you tell people things and it's just a way to make conversation. But she did. She wrote it and it's a movie. It's a real movie.
So listen to this. So there's Harriet the Spy. And then a year or two later, there's The Long Secret, which is the second book. And in that one, Harriet's not the protagonist. The protagonist is Beth Ellen.
Yeah, it sucks.
And that one has
Beth Ellen? Yeah. The one who always wants to cry?
Yeah.
But that one actually has a mystery in it. Mm. But the thing that people liked about that one was Beth Ellen gets her period. And that was like radical at the time.
Mm.
Then there's a third book called Sport, which is about sport. Then the fourth book, which she never got to write because they rejected it, Harriet falls in love with a black boy. And the publisher was like, no. So she was like, fuck it, I'm not even going to compromise it.
You know, did you ever read Anastasia Krupnik?
Mm-mm. No.
So it's very, very similar to Harriet the Spy. And in that book, her love interest, she's white and her love interest is a black boy. And her dad is a writer. He's a poet. She's like a creative type too. I wonder, I gotta look into like if the writer of that book was inspired by Louise Fitzhugh or if they even like knew each other or were contemporaries or whatever, because they're very similar now that I think about it. But that's a great book series as well.
So we talked about how it inspired, you know, you guys. Can you think of any contemporary movies or books that you think it inspired? Do you think that there's a cultural legacy that comes from Harriet the Spy?
I feel like it in itself, like we said earlier, sounds like, now that I know more about Fitzhugh's background, it sounds like it was sort of inspired by...
Well, it's inspired a little bit by To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. Because in the school play, she plays an onion, whereas...
In To Kill a Mockingbird, there's a pageant and they're all food and Scout plays a ham. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a direct reference.
Yeah. You know, I never made that connection until now.
I'm reading this biography that just came out like a few months ago. It's called Sometimes You Have to Lie: The Life and Times of Louise Fitzhugh, Renegade Author of Harriet the Spy by Leslie Brody. And the author of this book makes the point that there seems to be a connection between Harriet and Holden Caulfield and Holden Caulfield's little sister.
Maybe the sister.
Phoebe?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's weird.
I don't know. I haven't read Catch of the Rye since high school. And I even then, I didn't really read it.
I hate that book.
Yeah, I couldn't get past like the first couple pages.
Well, I guess there's a connection there in that they're bad kids.
Because it's like he has money too. It's like a New York-y book. I feel like he's in the middle of a breakdown, like actively, you know, and she's maybe staving off a breakdown later in life by having this happen to her young.
The other contemporary of hers that I think there's a little bit of a connection is Maurice Sendak, who she said was her hero because of what he was able to do. Because Max in Where the Wild Things Are is a bad kid. That's why that book was so criticized.
You know, it's funny. Even when the movie, well, I imagine this was definitely the case in the 60s, but in the 90s when the movie came out, I remember thinking this movie doesn't feel as sanitized as a lot of kids' movies feel. You know, they talked about like a little girl getting boobs over the summer and like, you know, I think I was like shocked and I thought that this is great. Like, this is how people talk. Like, this is how kids talk.
This is the content I'm here for.
You know, it's sort of like that, the thing that, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking of modern things that are emulating like Spielberg movies, like kids cursing, right? Like, so you have it in the It franchise and, you know, even Stranger Things. Harriet the Spy is like not that salty. But, you know, it does deal with things that kids really talk about. So I'm thinking of that. I'm thinking of, I think she says something like a very mild curse, like damn or something in the movie.
She calls people finks a lot.
Oh, no, she doesn't do that in the movie. I don't think. A fink kind of went away.
I want to bring it back.
Let's do it right here. But in any event, it felt like...
She's salty as all fuck. She's salty.
She's not as salty in the movie. But yeah, it felt a little grittier than most kids' movies.
It certainly is. I think it is, yeah. For sure. It's not as far as like Pete and Pete.
I mean, she's on Pete and Pete.
She is. Right. She's the girl with the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, she's Dawn from Buffy.
Yeah. She's making some really interestingly punctuated Instagram posts lately about the whole Joss Whedon situation. A lot of periods, a lot of like sentence fragments.
Yeah.
I think in the movie, it seems like they try to soften the parents too.
Actually, I think the parents are more bad in the movie. In the book, she kind of accepts that her parents are just absent.
Right. I feel like they're kind of, in the movie, they're more like attentive to her.
But they make more of a point of them being shitty parents in the movie.
Well, it's when they take away her notebook, that's tough.
Yeah, why would any adult do that to a child? Like, that's a weird punishment.
Well, I guess because they felt it's like taking away a kid's phone. Like, they felt like she was spending too much time doodling and not paying attention in school.
This is a story about a precious, wonderful little girl who her Philistine beneath her classmates are intimidated by her prowess and try to take her down a peg.
You're a real Harriet apologist.
Hey, that shit was private.
I feel like we discussed this via text, but I know she's a child. She's very irresponsible with her private notebook. Are you laying on the floor?
Yes.
You know, did not have a lock on it, says private in huge letters. You know, this is not spy behavior. You don't put yourself out there like that. And just, you said it was knocked out of her hand in a game. If it was precious to her, you go retrieve that, hide it in a tree, put it up your pants, you know, do something, but don't let other people get it. That's take a cyanide capsule.
When Marion says, "Where's your notebook?" And then she says, "Have you checked up your butt?"
That's right. I remember like going to the movies and I think my dad was with me and him being like, "What movie are we in? This is filth."
It really is a great movie to begin the Nickelodeon films, because it's about an independent child, a child who like knows who she is and what she wants. We got to talk about the orange VHSs.
Oh yeah,
kids, VHSs. Back before streaming and before DVD and Blu-ray, they had VHSs, Video Home System, and you would play them on a VCR, and they were all black. Except for the ones Nickelodeon made, because they were orange.
Mm-hmm. And I remember opening the case and being like, like shocked that it was orange. And it was immediately my favorite thing in the entire world.
That smell takes me right back.
Yeah.
I miss video cassettes.
I have a whole bunch. I have a box. And we're gonna introduce the old technology to the boys one day. And I think I'm just going to let them do what they want with it, because they survived me, and I would like stick my finger in the circle and like rewind the tape when it came out of the thing. And you know, it's a very like analog technology that it's pretty easy to figure out.
They're kind of coming back a little bit. You're starting to see people collect them more.
I have a ton of like bootleg VHSs or things recorded from TV.
Oh yeah. Our family, we're big bootleggers.
Yes.
We had the setup of two VCRs hooked up together. So you could play a movie on one and record it on the other.
That's legit.
It was some real pirate stuff.
Right. and look how media literate we are. So good job.
Great.
Analog too. Every video cassette was numbered with a 3-digit number. And then my parents set up an alphabetized card catalog, because each individual video had like three movies on it. So it'd be
okay.
001 had Gremlins, Return of the Jedi, and a Bugs Bunny cartoon. And so you'd look in the card catalog for like Bugs Bunny. It was really crazy.
Yeah, insane.
It's the kind of thing that you get used to because it's your life, but then you think back and you're like, what?
That was definitely all mom.
But dad was the one who was like, no, every movie we rent, we got a copy.
So what was in my notebook? I just copied her. Like, I just like walked, I just like looked out the window. It was fifth grade, I remember specifically, because we lived in one apartment for 1 year during my fifth grade year. And that's when Harry the Spy came out. Mm-hmm. And it was on a major avenue in Brooklyn. And I just remember like really just imitating her and just like looking out the window at just like people on the street through my binoculars and writing stuff down. And like, especially like, just like exactly like she does in the movie. I had no originality at all.
Sure.
And then I remember I got like all my spy stuff from like the drugstore. It was like all cheap crap. And then there was a bar that we lived right across from. So like sometimes at night, like people would be outside the bar, like shady characters, like yelling and fighting. And I'd write that down. And then I remember I was, my privacy was taken from me, usurped. And so I destroyed it.
Do you think that these exercises actually helped you in some way? You're somebody who still journals.
Yes, I am. But they definitely didn't help me like make any friends.
No.
I guess.
I think that's another thing about it that's interesting. That's to like little smart nerdy kids is that she's entirely living in her own mind. Mm. She's living in a world of her own crafting. And I think to little nerdy kids, that's so like, yes.
It's all snark, though.
I don't know.
Not in the book. In the book, she has things where she's like, Gully said this. Is this how grown-ups think? Must think about this more.
Mm. Yeah, yes. But I was also reading the book, too, like in preparation for this episode. And there's stuff in there that's just like nasty. Like, oh, this woman is so incredibly fat. If I was that fat, I'd kill myself. It's like, jeez. She needed to learn a lesson.
Right. She does.
She does through bullying, which works.
No, I think he learns the lesson because Gully comes back and tells her, hey, kid, what the fuck? First of all, you're done taking notes. Actually write something. And, you know, go back to your friends and lie and tell them you didn't mean it. You got to lie.
I wrote a newsletter for my class. And I remember going to the like a copy shop and making copies of it so everybody could have one and bring it into school. And my teacher, like at the end of the day on Friday, like we read it together and she was like, this is great. Meanwhile, she's probably like, this is horrible.
I doubt
What a waste of time this was.
This is the cutest thing in the world. I bet she was so happy to have like an end of the day activity so she didn't have to think for once in her life.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, so my notebook for home, Nancy reminded me today that she's like, do you remember what the biggest mystery was? I was like, no, not at all. And she's like, so someone in our neighborhood painted their house pink and we were trying to figure out why. Why on earth would someone do such a thing? But in school, I actually got in trouble. I had a notebook, but it ended up somebody brought a tape recorder in and,
Talkboy?
It wasn't a Talkboy. It was like an actual tape recorder that they must have gotten from their parents. And I was on the playground and we were just like, I was just like being mean about other kids on the playground and just observing them. And I did it all in a British accent for some reason. And just like recorded, you know, like this is my demo reel. And this is me like for Comedy Central Roastmaster. And then she snarked on me. She snarked on me. She snitched on me. She went to, like, no one was in trouble. No one found out. She just took the recorder and went to the teacher and gave it to her and was like, Janine did this. Wow. And in her infinite wisdom, my fifth grade teacher, who is truly fantastic, spoke to me after class. She's like, I listened to the tape. I was like, oh. And she's like, it's very funny. She's like, but it's also very, very hurtful. And you can't say things like that. And you certainly shouldn't record them. And basically, like, gave me the golly, like, come to Jesus speech. And, I'm like so upset that she's going to tell my parents. She's like, I'm not telling your parents. I was like, oh, you can't do that.
I got some bad news. There are snitches around here.
She's like, I got your back. Don't you worry. No, she's fantastic. But I listened. I never did it again.
You know what you just reminded me of? This is sort of unrelated. When I was in seventh grade, I was writing like really bitchy notes about somebody, my friend. And the teacher did the thing that like teachers do on TV. And like she took it and like read it in front of like the class. And I got in huge trouble because it was very profane. And then I made it worse because then she was like, this is disgusting. She was like, I'm calling your parents. So I ran home and deleted the message off my parents' answering machine.
What very special episode of your life was this?
Remember, it was my seventh grade ELA class. And then she called back. So then my mom and dad were both like way more mad at me because they found out that I deleted the message. It was really, really embarrassing.
What would kids do now, though? Because Harriet is using an analog medium. She's using pen and paper. What would be, like, if they did do Harriet the Spy now, would she just be, like, in her notes app?
Kids text now, but when I first started subbing, and I was subbing in, like, middle and elementary school, there was still some note passing going on. And I would, as a teacher, I always, if I caught a kid passing note, I would take it, but I'd throw it out in front of them. I wouldn't read it.
I'd be afraid that I'd get in trouble.
Yeah, I don't want to. Maybe it's because I remember what a horrifying feeling that was to be like, oh my God, she's going to read these horrible things I'm saying about this kid that's sitting right next to me. And it was like horrible. It was like Pen 15. Like, it was like, hey, it's me. It was like this kid, let's say his name was Chris, because I know his name and it was not Chris, but I'm trying to protect the other. But it was like me being him, and I was like, hey, it's Chris, I want to touch your boobs.
Anthony, I feel aggressed.
Wow.
Oh my God. You know what? I'm thinking like maybe someone would have like a Tumblr that they kept, or like a Finsta, like a fake Instagram account where they would put stuff up and then somebody found it.
I think it's ripe for a remake.
I think so too.
It's time.
Gotta get on it.
You can't really say who would play who because it'd be all children. So.
Yeah, it'd be like a nobody, somebody we don't know.
I mean, maybe Gully. Like
Rosie O'Donnell.
she's still Gully.
Who would be a good Gully?
I'd love to like reintroduce or explore the racial element because I think it adds a you know a very very nuanced layer to the whole story and take more biographical elements from Louise Fitzhugh's life.
Octavia Spencer.
Ooh.
She can't do everything. I love her. I love her, but she can't be in every role.
I'm trying to think of, I don't know a kid. I don't think anyone watches the film anymore. I haven't seen successive generations of kids watch it. What about the book? Do you know if, does anyone read the book anymore?
I don't think so. I taught middle school for like 6 years. And, you know, sixth graders, seventh graders, they weren't reading it.
Yeah, and I taught film classes, and I read all sorts of papers about different things, but I don't think I ever read a Harriet the Spy paper. Maybe the book is of the 60s and the film is of the 90s, and that's just it. The lasting impact is us and our snark.
I feel like the lasting impact is like Harriet's manifesto when she's in the garden. I remember thinking, like, that's what I want to do. That's it. Which they're all, like, making wishes on soda, which I mean... What a magical day.
Right. So is a big thing for you.
It sure is. Yes, what are they drinking? Really? I mean, they're shaking up these bottles that are on a tree. They're going to get some kind of illness.
They're ruining whatever soda that is.
Whatever that is. And then they're drinking from it. And, you know, Janie makes a wish that she wants to be a scientist, and Sport makes a wish that he wants to play more games than Cal Ripken Jr. I remember that. And then Harriet says, she's like, I want to see the whole world and I want to write down everything. And then shakes, you know, the biggest gulp from the soda.
Janine, you know, now that I'm thinking about your read of Gully as a criminal, perhaps that was alcohol. That might have been champagne.
Oh my God, it might have been champagne.
Well, certainly Gully told them to shake it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought them to this odd artist's like house. What the hell is this?
I don't know. They both seemed like weedsters.
That was a former lover of hers for sure.
Oh, definitely. Oh, did we talk about her teacher?
No.
Speaking of another time, her teacher's like right out of the 60s.
Yeah. And I feel like she's queer coded as well.
Yeah. Like Miss Frizzle.
But yeah, she's an odd duck, that one.
I love the part where she says like, where she does the whole thing. Like, does anyone want to nominate anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
And she asked, does anybody want to vote for Harriet? I love that she's just like, I'm on your side, Harriet.
Right. Boy, the kid with the purple socks.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so who are the kids? There's Pinky Whitehead.
Who was gross.
doing the Hamlet soliloquy. Why were they reading that in sixth grade?
I don't know, but he was pretty good.
And, but it was so Nickelodeon because all the other kids were like, man, this sucks.
They're yawning. And the teacher's so into it.
I do love the line when he's like, it is pretty good cake.
There's the girl who looks like her face was sucked in.
He's in Mean Girls.
Yes. Oh, that's a nice little parallel. That's fun.
He's the girl who Regina George says, I love your skirt. And then she's like, that's the ugliest effing skirt I've ever seen.
This girl cannot catch a break.
They went to a casting director and were like, hey, do you have some fucking shit on that we could just like fucking just roast mercilessly? Like, yeah, how about that's what this girl's whole fucking filmography is.
Oh my god.
Like some of Harriet's revenge was so lame. She was like,
wasn't she cut off her
blade? That's pretty intense.
That's really, I felt like that did not fit the crime.
She plays it off so well too. But and they're watching like educational videos from the 50s.
Yes.
But then like that girl Carrie, she like draws on her magazines.
Oh yeah. She'll get right. Magazines.
And crosses her name out. But
you know what? Yeah, on the desk. It's so intense.
It was like Kill Bill.
She's a maniac.
She'd be a school shooter today.
I think that their plan against Harriet was not very good. They like make a clubhouse. Okay, that's really more about you than her. And then they're like, we're spy catchers, but they just chill out. Like, it's weird.
What about
when they also cover her in paint?
Yeah. And then they skate around her and terrorize her, like from the Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With like trash can lids.
Right. Yeah. They make it so she can't spy because they're loud around her.
But really, they make it so she can't think.
Right.
And it's so important to her.
It's not the greatest plan. And they're like, we have a plan. And she's like, okay.
What if I just stay home?
Yeah. How about that?
We just sit around and eat cake, and Pinky eats cake with a wrench.
Horrible.
That kid does suck. Every observation she writes is correct.
Beth Ellen.
I wish someone would just kick her and get it over with.
I also love, for some reason, the part with the cat guy. It's just like in my head, it's always just like jelly roll. He's like boop da bop boop da bop bop bop. Like I just know every part of that scat.
And then he looks up and he goes, Charlie Parker. And I'm like, what? Who? I'm a child. I don't know who that is. I was like, is that a cat? Oh, Jelly Roll.
Cat named Jelly Roll, who he feeds twice.
That's right.
One for you, Jelly Roll.
I'm like, what?
Oh, we need to talk about Eartha Kitt.
Oh my god, that's right. Oh my god, and she's in the commercial. Well, she's not really, but you know, she's supposed to be in her house in the commercial. She breaks and enters into this woman's house.
So that character is based on Louise Fitzhugh's paternal grandmother, who was really, really rich and lived in her Memphis mansion and just literally stayed in bed all day. A lot of the fuck you rich people comes from her childhood.
I highlighted in the book a line that she says that's also in the movie that is just fantastic, where she says, she's like, I've discovered the secret of life, darling. You just take to your bed and you never reemerge. It's like, that is the secret of life. And then at the end, she's got that like weird workout machine and she's
reading. Oh, yeah. And she's like, it's shaking her.
The book is like, how to reconnect.
Well, in the book, she finds out that she's fatally sick and she thinks, oh, my God, I've wasted my life. And then she gets better and then she decides to, like, go out and do stuff.
Oh, she's at the performance at the end, I think.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that makes no sense.
she's a patron of the school, I imagine.
I thought they did a good job updating certain elements for the 90s, too. In the movie, like the Italian immigrant family, they update to a Chinese-American family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That runs the grocery store.
Yeah.
It just felt more current.
Why are there dirty street urchins? Like, this is not Victorian-era England.
And when that guy who steals the purse, like, crashes into the eggs.
Mm-hmm. She does nothing.
She just shakes her head. That's it.
Oh, boy. You know, it's hard to... Oh, I also wanted to say, I was going to say, it's hard to like keep track of all the things I want to say, but I also want to say that I was for a minute there, like, I'm going to eat tomato and mayo sandwiches.
Oh my God, me too.
And I tried it and it's very bad.
Could not bring myself to commit to that.
Yeah, it sounds bad.
I did the middle part ponytail. I dressed like her. I had the books. Tried to do the sandwich. Sandwich is disgusting.
Beyond disgusting. And then the mom's like, how about cream cheese and olive? It's like, oh God.
Well, I mean, that's where she gets the tomato and mayo. Like, this is the alternative in that household of horrors.
The household of horrors. I didn't like how, like, in the book, their parents seem to live in, like, a really nice, like, brownstone. Mm. Where in the movie, it's, like, crazy. It's, like, Beetlejuice's house. It's, like, crazy Art Deco shit.
It's very cold and, like weird kind of modern art-y. Yeah.
Everything in the movie is kind of, like, half urban, half suburban, weirdly.
Mm. But Janie lives in a Victorian, doesn't she?
Yeah, so does Sport. But, like, they don't look like New York buildings. They look like Boston or Detroit buildings or something.
Mm. Probably fucking Toronto.
Or, like, Harlem, like, all the way uptown.
Yeah, it is Toronto. As a matter of fact, I noticed
every tonight, movie's Toronto.
Playing in the park, you could see there's, like, a big Canadian, like, leaf arrangement in the background. Like, a red
people
leaf.
Playing hockey.
God, yeah, Marion Hawthorne is a really great villain.
She certainly is.
I wonder what she's up to.
She's acting. I've seen her in things recently.
Yeah, she looks familiar.
Or she looks the same. Like, she looks great.
Harriet's mom is on Succession.
Oh, okay.
Janie was like a lead in that second Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah, she was Jeff Goldblum's daughter.
Yeah, she went on to do stuff. And then what's his face was the lead in Everwood. Sport. He was adorable. And he was in The Patriot.
Oh, really? I never saw that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Boy, is that movie historically inaccurate.
But yeah, I mean, they're all still at working, it seems, so good for them. Towards the end of the movie, I mean, there's that little like subtle Marion and Swart have a thing for each other.
Yeah, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the book she says that she's gonna marry Swart. It she only says it once and it doesn't sound like it's about love. It just sounds like he'll take care of her and then she could go be a spy.
Well, I think it's like in that way that like books from back then, like 12-year-olds were like five. Like just kids were just more innocent for longer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like she was just like, yeah, he's my friend who's a boy, so I'm gonna marry him.
Me, yeah.
There's a line in the movie, I don't know if it's the same in the book, but her mother is tucking her in and saying, someday you'll have kids. You know, you'll grow up and get married and have kids. And she's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, and she's also there's also a part in the book where she says she wouldn't ever want to get married, even though she says I'm gonna marry Sport.
Okay, she's an adult right now. What is she doing?
I think dream job. She became a journalist.
She's writing for Comedy Central roasts.
I think she probably went to work for. Okay, here it is. Here it is. She probably went to work for like a mainstream media outlet writing, like either writing copy for their websites or doing whatever. Well, okay, this is 90s Harriet, not 60s Harriet. And then she had a hobby blog on the side that ended up taking off. And now she runs her own, like, I don't know that it's a lifestyle blog. Maybe it's a travel blog because she absolutely, you know, wanted to travel the world. And I don't know that she got married. I don't know. Maybe she's aromantic or asexual. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, maybe she's the queer hero we always knew she would be.
And she's very successful until somebody finds out that she used the R slur and she gets canceled.
Oh my gosh. She used the R slur as a child.
Yeah.
We're out here canceling children.
I feel like to think of real people I know that were like Harriet, she probably grew up and like got a degree in like social work and got into like human rights stuff. She writes on the side.
I don't see that.
She's mean, but she's like super duper liberal lefty.
No, but I don't see her get. I see her sticking to writing.
I see her as really struggling with. I feel like she really struggles with empathy. Like that's something she's forever working on, and she's really naturally objective, or she thinks she is. Right, she's objective to a fault, maybe.
Sociopath.
I disagree.
She practices smiling in the mirror.
Oh, Harriet.
Harriet. Ooh, maybe she became a true crime writer.
She definitely has a podcast.
She has a podcast.
For sure.
She definitely has a podcast for sure.
Oh God, yeah.
A true crime. I mean, who doesn't? Am I right? We don't need to hear from everyone. she has a true crime podcast, and I feel like she has a lot of dogs.
No, she couldn't have dogs, and she wouldn't be able to travel so much. She'd have to kennel them all the time. I'm really trying to work out the logistics of Harriet's life.
I feel like this could be a novel, a bestseller. Like how they have those like adult novels now of like the Babysitter's Club gals.
Love a Harriet right now.
What if she inherits her family's wealth, becomes stymied by the pressure that she's put on herself to have great success, and becomes paralyzed by it? And then she becomes the woman she used to observe, where she like doesn't leave her house. And then quarantine strikes and she's like, oh my God, I've wasted my life. I have to get out there.
That is terrific. Maybe she grows up and becomes a sex columnist.
No, she's too asexual.
Her and her gal pals take on the city.
I don't think she's interested in sex.
An old golly is Samantha.
Old Samantha. Oh, boy. All right. I think we did it. And then some. Anthony, Janine, thank you for being here.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Sharing. 1 second. Oh, no, we can't do it. Never mind. I was like, I actually think I know where my notebook is.
Have you checked up your butt?
Oh, no. You got me. I walked right into that one.
This is PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. Janine Gagliardi, Anthony Buongiorno. I don't know his last name for a second. I wish I had been into it as a kid.
You missed out.
I missed out. I think there was a time in my life where if you liked something, I categorically didn't like it.
Yes, I know. Talked about in the last episode where I had a Tamagotchi, so you made fun of it.
Yeah. And now you have a Tamagotchi.
You bet. You bet I do. He's sleeping.
I feel like also 1996, 1997, anything from around then was like, that's when we were going through like a critical age difference.
Right. If it wasn't Star Wars in 1996, I probably didn't give a fuck. If it wasn't Star Wars or like GoldenEye 64.
Yeah.
And boobs.
Harriet the Spy has boobs. Well, not Harriet, but you know.
Harriet.
She talks about them.
Harriet grew them over the summer.
Who wants to say go bye-bye?
Me. Go bye-bye.